I am happy to be able to speak at chapel today on the Beatitudes. Beatitudes have served the church and me personally as words of comfort and beauty. Not only do these words appear on calendars and bookmarks and plaques, they are often the first memory verses that young children may memorize. In my case, when I was 13, it was one of my first sermons that I ever preached, where we went through each one of the Beatitudes step by step, giving witness to how I could exhort the church to go and do likewise. So even as a teen, I witnessed to their goodness and their grace. We who are blessed easily give the Beatitudes our mental agreement. As words of truth, the Beatitudes orient our lives and comfort our hearts. Of course, Beatitudes are also disrupting words for others. The world characterizes the American dream by fidelity investments and net worth. Resumes and e-portfolios describe our identities. Around here, we let GPAs and curriculum vitas and social clubs and all kinds of things to help create our identities. Every image on ESPN and Vogue proclaims that we don't believe the picture portrayed in Beatitudes. We believe other definitions of what it means to be a real man or an American woman. We go for the noble, the sophisticated, the wise, the educated, the powerful, the beautiful, the rich, and all other kinds of words that describe our competitive world. This is how you will possess the world. These are the ones who will be successful. These are the ones who are the winners. These are the ones that will inherit the earth. But Jesus says the meek will inherit the earth. And the world says, not a chance will the meek inherit the earth. The Beatitudes are disrupting words for those who define the pursuit of happiness as a right protected by the American dream. But more than disrupting, the words often don't disrupt at all. Because we are immune. They are just platitudes for plaques and calendars in a teen's first sermon. The church domesticates the words in such a way that though they are memorized, they are not fully believed in the heart. Let me tell you a story about my daughter's computer. One day when she was first moving into the dorm, her roommate decided to check her email on my daughter's computer, but it wasn't set up yet, and so she took the telephone line and she plugged it into the port, the Ethernet port. And when you take something that doesn't belong in a space and yet you still try to force it into that space, it sometimes can cause great damage. And so it was with my daughter's computer. Those wires that are in that Ethernet port were crushed and pushed back, almost irretrievable. And the only way to correct or repair such damage is a lot of time and a lot of expense. So when we take something that doesn't belong in a space and yet we still force it into that space, damage is caused. And I recall that story this past January when I was in San Juan at the Association for Theological Field Educators Conference, ATFE. The theme was La Plaza, a place of encounter. As contextual theologians, we are always listening and watching our particular location. We're wanting to see our surroundings, to see what it's like. San Juan is known for its beautiful and historic plazas, places of community. Especially before AC and TV, it was a place where community would gather, a central location for social interaction. The plaza is a place to meet new friends and to catch up with old friends, to hear the news of the day and to celebrate life. And plazas around the world, whether they are the marketplace, whether they are the town square, the Little League field, the church, whether they are social networking sites, plazas around the world are places where people can come together and be society. They can be neighborhood. They can be the polis. Michael Walzer defines civil society as a space of uncoerced human association and also the set of relational networks formed for the sake of family, faith, interest, and ideology that fill this space. Likewise, plazas are places of inclusion where we gather together. It's not a place that you can defriend somebody. It's not a place where you can block somebody. It's a place where we are all gathered together and are included. Plazas are places of fiesta. Fiesta is not just a celebration, but fiesta functions for people where you can push against the darkness in your life. You can resist that which is oppressive to you. So while we are in San Juan and we were celebrating Plaza, there was a cultural anthropologist who during the question and answer time from San Juan stood up and questioned our theme in our interaction with the theme. He said that we had a very romantic notion of what Plaza was like, and that we had somehow lost Plaza as it is today with some notion of the way it used to be. The Inquirer is disturbing to me because I was on the steering committee that helped plan the conference, and actually, because it's a biennial, had spent 2 years thinking about the theme of Plaza and putting together the conference and putting together our interactions, which ended up being more plastic than real. The Plaza. The questioner noted that the old neighborhoods are no more because of upward mobility creates an exodus to the suburbs. If you observe the Plaza today, he said, it'll be much like your city parks because it's a place where people are looking for a bench to have a bed at night. It's a place where drugs are trafficked and all kinds of sex peddlers are there, a place for lost souls. If you will see, security officers at designated times will come in and make sweeps through the Plaza in order that when the cruise ships land and they come off and they start touring the city, that they can see a clean and beautiful and historic place that was advertised to them in the travel brochure. And so the Plaza is cleaned up. So both the tourists and the ATFI contextual theologians saw only a sanitized version of the Plaza and the fiesta. When we watched the mariachi band and the dancers, we were being entertained rather than being involved in resisting darkness or celebrating life. We caused damage. We disrupted peace because we were moving into a space where we really didn't belong. It was not our social location. And to a greater extent, Stan Saunders and Chuck Campbell described the same type of thing that happened in Atlanta in 1996 when the Summer Olympics arrived there. And they just started moving out, pushing out, and dislocating all those folks who called the surrounding area home. And that dislocation was an oppression, all for our sake and for the television audience. How do you repair such damage? Blessed are the peacemakers, for you are the children of God. Blessed are the repairers of damage, because you are the offspring of God. These are disrupting words to us who cause damage, who create social dislocation, who participate in marginalizing others based upon gender or identity issues, economic location, educational status, ethnicity, nationality, or denominational affiliation. We cry out, peace, peace. But there is no peace. It's much like the little boy going down the hill and he scrapes his knee as he comes flying off of his tricycle. And he comes screaming into the house and he says to his mommy, blow on it, blow on it. You know, make it feel better. But she doesn't blow on it. She gets out the iodine and she applies the antiseptic in order to kill the germs. She knows that maybe a spoonful of sugar doesn't always make the medicine go down. Often we do not participate in the hard work of repairing damage. We want to blow on it instead of working towards something more peaceful. Yet among us, there are those that are peacemakers. Among us can be found persons of meekness. Among us, we find mourners and we find the poor. And their presence is at odds with the American dream and our right to pursue happiness. They exchange peace with us and they bless us with all of God's goodness. And so as they are among us, we gather them together and we say, "Blessed are you, for you are meek and you are pure of heart. And you're peacemakers among us. And you bless us with your presence. Blessed are the repairers of damage, for you are God's offspring." So how do you repair such damage? I'd like to offer just a simple starting point. A simple act of passing the peace that signifies an alternate reality. To help us imagine what peace might look like ahead of time, maybe as we gather together, we can exchange peace with one another. It's a simple act that, if practiced regularly among the family of God, in the midst of each other in the sanctuary, it might also then could go outward as well as we become peacemakers. It's a Christian practice that was not found in my home church growing up, but Dorothy Butler Bass defines a Christian practice as a formative activity that Christian people do together over time in response to and in light of God's active presence for the life of the world. Passing the peace. It's an act of hospitality. It's an act of peacemaking. It's not a socializing exercise. It's not a greet and meet time. In fact, as I was Googling passing the peace, one of the complaints that I was seeing among more liturgical churches is how it has somehow degraded and become a greet and meet time where people are being loud and rambunctious and obnoxious. Passing the peace is a time where people come together to exchange peace. As Gregory Jones talks about, it's a disarming and disconcerting act for some, but it is God's tender movement towards us and God's gentle nudging of us towards one another and towards a kingdom not yet realized. Sometimes I hear stories of Christians who experience deep hurt and pain, and you hear those stories too, such as the man at the finance committee meeting who says something that he ought not to say and he causes offense. And then they are gathered together on Sunday, and the minister says, "Let us pass the peace today." And he turns and he goes out into the aisle and he reaches out his hand to the offended party and he says, "The peace of the Lord be unto you." And the words of forgiveness are spoken back and also unto you. These are words of repair, words of peace, words that are more performative in their nature, because when they're spoken to one another, God brings about reconciliation. And so we are going to participate in this simple act of passing the peace. And if you've not done this before, many of you have, as you have participated in other fellowships at times, but it's a simple greeting. May the peace of the Lord be unto you. And you can respond, "May the peace of the Lord be unto you." Or you can respond, "And unto you also," or "also unto you." Or you can simply just say "peace." But we're going to greet the person in front of you, the person behind you, the person beside you, and greet them with the peace of God. And let us all be blessed with God's peace as God's children. May the peace of the Lord be unto you today.